Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We do so many serious programs, and we know there are many serious topics for us to explore every single day, but every now and then, you just need to laugh. And we realized, looking at our records, that it's been well over a year and a half since we've had what we used to do every spring and fall and summer and winter, and that's a classic comedy program. To take a break from the whole thing. And so we're going to do that this hour of the program. We're just going to have some laughs. We'll be hearing from some wonderful classic comedians, Bob Newhart, Lily Tomlin, Abbott and Costello, Nichols and May, Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner. And we're just delighted to be able to present these to you to take a break and have a few laughs. And we'll try to do them a little more often than we have for the past year and a half, which means we haven't done any of them. We're going to be starting our classic comedy hour with Bob and Ray, two of our favorite comedians. They were radio announcers, and I love it when new people find out about them and continue to enjoy their comedy because they're really timeless. They were radio announcers at the same station, WHDH in Boston in the 1940s. Bob was a disc jockey and Ray a newsman, and they had mostly improvised comedy, and it started when they were asked to fill time on the air when the Red Sox were in a rain delay. They had their own weekday show in 1946, and they were on the air for over 40 years on the NBC, CBS, and Mutual Networks, and a final gig at NPR, also on television and on the stage. Bob Elliott, we interviewed him about a year ago, is now 91, and Ray died in 1990. In a comedy piece, in a piece in The New Yorker about their comedy recently, the author said that Bob and Ray's comedy media criticism would be right up there at home on The Daily Show or The Colbert Report. We selected, we had three of their routines, but in the interest of time, we have narrowed it down to two for our classic comedy show today. This one is very famous. Bob Elliott is the Komodo dragon expert, and I guess it teaches all of us to listen. Bob and Ray.
Well, we've had from time to time with us experts. We always love to bring them on our programs and shows. Tonight is Dr. Darryl Dexter, the Komodo dragon expert from Upper Montclair, New Jersey. Say, would you tell us a little bit about the Komodo dragon, Doctor?
Happy to. The Komodo dragon is the world's largest living lizard. It's a ferocious carnivora found on the steep-sloped island of Komodo, in the Lesser Sunda chain of the Indonesian archipelago and the nearby islands of Rinja, Padar, and Flores.
Where do they come from?
The Komodo dragon, world's largest living lizard, is found on the island of Komodo in the Lesser Sunda chain of the Indonesian archipelago and the nearby islands of Rinja, Padar, and Flores. Now, we have two in this country that were given to us some years ago by the late former premier of Indonesia, Sukarno, and they reside in the National Zoo in Washington.
I believe I read somewhere where a foreign potentate gave America some Komodo dragons. Is that true?
Yes. The former premier of Indonesia, Sukarno, gifted our country with two Komodo dragons, world's largest living lizards, and they reside at the National Zoo in Washington.
Well, now, if we wanted to take the youngsters to see a Komodo dragon, where would we take the youngsters to see a Komodo dragon?
If you were in the vicinity of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., you would take the kiddos to the National Zoo. And there you'd see two live Komodo dragons, the world's largest living lizards. There's a stuffed Komodo dragon in the lobby of the Royal Hotel in Kathmandu, Nepal.
Now, they're of the lizard family, aren't they?
Yes. They're the world's largest living lizard and a ferocious carnivory. They have red darting tongues which suck in air and take it to their smelling glands in their throats.
Now, do they eat other things, these Komodo dragons?
Yes, they're ferocious carnivores. In fact, they can gulp down the hindquarters of a deer in one bite.
And what about that smelly tongue they have?
No, they have a red tongue, which brings in air to their smelling glands.
Okay, well, I guess that about exhausts the subject, Doctor. I want to thank you for coming by. I know we all know a good deal more now about the Komodo dragon than we did a few moments ago. Do you have a ride home?
No, I don't.
Well, maybe somebody here in the audience will give you a lift after the
very
show.
Very kind of them if they
Look,
would.
Why don't you stand over there, okay? Thank you.
Bob and Ray and everything you've ever wanted to know about the Komodo dragon. It's a classic routine, and I've always wanted to conduct an interview like that. It would be funny, wouldn't it? Another of their very, very famous routines, and I think this one is even funnier. You know, spit it out, spit it out, spit it out. It's titled Slow Talk. I'm just saying it makes me laugh. Slow Talkers of America, Bob and Ray.
This is a surprise time for me because I haven't had an opportunity to meet and talk with our next guest. Incidentally, this chair here sat in Mary Magoon's dining room for years and years. I don't know if that has any special meaning to you, sir. No. But would you sit there now and tell us your name, please?
Harlow P. Whitcomb.
And where are you from?
From Glens Falls.
New York.
New York.
And what do you do?
I am the president and recording
secretary.
Secretary of the STOA.
What does that stand
the
for?
Slow Talkers of America. Believe
in speaking slowly,
in forming
your words, thoughts,
our ideas and opinions clearly before
speaking.
We speak. We are here
in New York City.
In the city of New York. Attending
a convention.
Our annual
convention.
Membership
convention.
Convention. All of our members, all 200
members
and 50
members,
seven members are here
speaking
slowly
so that you'll never be misunderstood,
as opposed to the members of the F.
T-O-A.
T-O-A.
O-A.
A. The Fast.
Talkers of America.
Talkers.
Of America.
Of America.
America.
Our credo
is to speak slowly.
Goes something like this.
Would you lower the curtain, please?
We
give me a nervous wreck.
Bob and Ray in one of their very, very well-known routines, Slow Talkers of America. We had a chance to interview Bob. He's just a charming man. And then he sent Rhonda, our producer at the time, a thank you note written on a typewriter that I don't think he's ever learned to use the computer. And it was a thank you to us for having him on the air as though anybody had ever forgotten about him. People who hear them remember them forever. And he just, thank you for keeping our comedy alive. And we said, always. We'll do it always. We'll keep your comedy alive. Okay, we're doing our classic comedy hour. We haven't done one for a long time, so today is the day, and this is the hour. And we will move on to, actually, a listener request got us rolling on all of this. This Bob Newhart routine is a listener request, and it's Newhart's Abe Lincoln versus Madison Avenue. It was recorded in 1960. 100 years after Lincoln was elected, and it asks, what would politics have been like during the Civil War if it involved the public relations and advertising machines of today? It's set on the eve of the Gettysburg Address as Lincoln and his PR consultant discuss Lincoln's image and Grant's drinking and many other subjects.
Right now, ladies and gentlemen, Bob Newhart.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Many of you may have read The Hidden Persuaders. It's about advertising. And one of the points the book made was that the real danger of the public relations man or the advertising man was that they were creating images. And they felt that in the presidential campaigns, the candidates were really getting closer and closer together. There was no real difference between them. And you were really voting for the man. And this got me to thinking, supposing this science were as far advanced during the Civil War as it is today, and there was no Lincoln. Now, the advertising people, realizing this, would have had to create a Lincoln. And I think they would have gone about it something like this. This is a telephone conversation between Abe and his press agent just before Gettysburg. Hi, Abe, sweetheart, how are you? How's Gettysburg? Sort of a drag, huh? Well, Abe, you know them small Pennsylvania towns. You seen one, you seen them all. Right. Listen, Abe, I got the note. What's the problem? You're thinking of shaving it off. Abe, don't you see that's part of the image? Right, with the shawl and the stovepipe at the string tie. You don't have the shawl. Where's the shawl, Abe? You left it in Washington. What are you wearing, Abe? A sort of cardigan? Abe, don't you see that doesn't fit with the string tie and the beard? Abe, would you leave the beard on and get the shawl, huh? All right, now what's this about Grant? You're getting a lot of complaints on Grant's drinking, huh? Abe, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't see the problem. I mean, you knew he was a lush when you pointed him, you see him? You're gag writers. Yeah, you're gag writers. You want to come back with something funny, huh? Maybe an anecdote about a town drunk. Well, I can't promise anything, Abe. I'll get him working on it. All right, Abe, you got the speech. Abe, you haven't changed the speech, have you? Abe, what do you change the speeches for? A couple minor changes, I'll bet. All right, what are they? You what? You typed it. Abe, how many times have we told you on the backs of envelopes? I understand it's harder to read that way, Abe, but it looks like you wrote it on the train coming down. Abe, could you do this? Could you memorize it and then put it on the backs of the envelopes? We're getting a lot of play in the press on that. How are the envelopes holding out? You could stand another box. All right, what else, Abe? You change 87 to 87? I understand it's not the same thing, Abe. Well, Abe, that's meant to be a grabber. Abe, we test marketed that in an Erie, and they went out of their minds about it. Abe, it's sort of like Mark Anthony saying, friends, Romans, countrymen, I've got something I want to tell you. You see what I mean, Abe? What else? People will little note nor long remember. Abe, what could possibly be wrong with that? They'll remember it. Abe, they'll remember it. It's the old humble bit. You can't say it's a great speech. I think everybody's going to remember it, Abe. You come off a braggart, don't you see that? Abe, do the speech the way Charlie wrote it, would you? The inaugural address swung, didn't it? All right, anything else? You talk to some newspaper men. Abe, I wish you wouldn't talk to newspaper men. Well, you always put your foot in. No, that's just what I mean, Abe. No. You're a rail splitter, then an attorney. Abe, it doesn't make any sense that way. I mean, you wouldn't give up your law practice to become a rail splitter, don't you? Would you read the biog, Abe? You'll save a lot of trouble on this end. Abe, listen, before I forget, the manufacturer is coming out with the Abe Lincoln t-shirt on Tuesday. Could you work that into the address somewhere, Abe? Play it by ear, whatever you can do. Abe, have you got a pencil and paper there? Would you take this down? You can fool all of the people some of the time, and some of the people all of the time. But you can't fool all the people all the time. Well, you keep doing it differently, Abe. The last quote I got was, you can fool all the people all the time. And Abe, hold on. They come up with a thing on Grant. Right. Good. Yeah, all beautiful. Abe, listen to this. They got a beautiful squelch on Grant. Right. The next time they bug you about Grant's drinking, you tell them you're going to find out what brand he drinks and send a case of it to all your other generals. No. It's like the brand was the reason he won. No. Abe, use it. It's funny. Trust me on this. Saturday night? Oh, Abe, I'm sorry. I'm gonna be in New York Saturday night. A bridge party at the White House? Oh, Abe, I'd love to make it. How about Seward? You try him? He'll be out of town too, huh? Oh, that's a, you and what's your name? Be home alone. Mary, be home alone. Huh? Listen, Abe, why don't you take in a play? I'll be talking to you. Go on.
Bob Newhart in his Abe Lincoln versus Madison Avenue classic comedy routine. And this is a perfect time to say, of course, we're going to talk about Abe Lincoln tomorrow. Beautiful. I can't even pick it up. It's so heavy. It must weigh 40 pounds. Beautiful book, life book, an intimate portrait of Abraham Lincoln. And we'll be speaking with a Gettysburg scholar from Gettysburg College in Pennsylvania. So that's coming up tomorrow. You're listening to Classic Comedy. We have yet to come Abbott and Costello, and we're going to be hearing from Lily Tomlin, Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner and others. And so stay with us. We're laughing. It's good to laugh. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're doing Classic Comedy this hour of the show, and we move on to Lily Tomlin. Earlier this month, you may recall that Lily received the Kennedy Center Honors. President Obama praised her portrayals of many characters, and including one you'll hear from momentarily, telephone operator Ernestine. And Tomlin told him, "What I'd like to see is a big stream of gay drag artists come out as Ernestine." This, as we continue Classic Comedy, is Lily Tomlin, Ernestine, with a conversation with J. Edgar Hoover.
One ringy dingy. Is this Mr. Hoover? Mr. J. Edgar Hoover? Good. Then I have reached the party to whom I am speaking. Mr. Hoover, this is Miss Tomlin from the telephone company. It is my duty, Mr. Hoover, to discuss with you some of the abuses of your instrument. Yes, yes, it does sound rather un-American, doesn't it? Now then, Mr. Hoover, I have your file here before me. Oh, yes, I'm sure that you have a file on me, too. After all, turnabout is fair play. Yes, it does sound perverted. Now then. Mr. Hoover, I have a delicate problem. I find that you and your agents have indulged in the illegal and unfair practice of wiretapping. Oh, Mr. Hoover, listening to other people's conversations. Oh, how do I know? From listening to your calls, that's how I know. Oh, no. Mr. Hoover, don't be rude. I'll make a loud noise into my mouthpiece and perhaps deafen you for life. Now, Mr. Hoover, may I ask, do you have a telephone directory handy? Good. Let us turn to page VIII and recite in unison. It is a crime under both federal and state law to use a telephone for annoying or harassing purposes, or to knowingly permit a phone under one's control to be used for such purposes. This includes calls in which the caller remains silent, etc., 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 etc. Oh, you do know the law, Mr. Hoover. Now, J. Edgar, listen, is there anybody at your place listening in? Everybody, good. Let's get right to the nitty-gritty. There's absolutely no reason for your people to skulk about, electronically speaking. You can get all the information you need from us. Probably a lot more accurately, too. Good. Good, then we will be in touch. Oh, and Mr. Hoover, before you go, I must tell you how much I admire your vacuum cleaner. Hello? Mr. Hoover? Well, why do you suppose he got so huffy? I was just being complimentary. Everybody knows there's nothing like a Hoover when you're dealing with dirt.
A somewhat prescient piece of comedy from Lily Tomlin. Her character, telephone operator Ernestine, and that's J. Edgar Hoover. You're listening to Classic Comedy here this hour on the Ideas Network. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We used to do these shows four times a year, and it's been a long time, so we decided too much time had passed, and today's the day we're laughing. This famous sketch was first performed for a national radio audience in February of 1938 when Abbott and Costello appeared on the Kate Smith Hour. And in 1956, a gold record of this routine was placed in the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum in Cooperstown. Abbott and Costello, you know what's to follow. Who's on first?
Hey! You know, in 1938, when we did the baseball thing, you know, every time I go to ask you the names of the fellas, you never would tell me.
Oh, yes, I did.
No, you didn't!
Hello.
Now, you got to tell me the names of the fellas on the team so when I want to say hello to them.
I told you before, Lou, they all have very strange names.
Well, you tell me their
names. Peculiar names. You know, like Dizzy Dean and...
His brother Daffy?
Daffy Dean.
And I always told you I was their cousin.
Who?
Goofy.
Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot about that. Well, let's see. There's on the bags. We have who's on first, what's on second. I don't know who's on third.
That's the same thing you gave me in 1938. I'm still trying to find out.
It's the same name.
All right. Now, who's on first?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who is on first?
Why do you keep asking me?
I'm not asking you. I'm telling you.
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's right.
Go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who? That's the man's name.
Now, look, when you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it. And why not? After all, the man's entitled to it.
Who's entitled to it?
Certainly.
Who gets the money?
Every dollar. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes. No. I've got a contract with him now.
You got a contract with who?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, who signed the contract?
Well, certainly it'd be no good unless he signed it.
Unless who signed it?
Yes.
Somebody has got to sign the contract. Now, who signed it?
That's right.
All I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base?
Oh, no, wait a minute. What is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Now, who's on first?
One base at a time.
Well, don't change the
players
around.
I'm not changing anybody. I'm only asking you what's the fellow's name on first base.
But I'm telling you what's the fellow's name on second
base. I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know.
He's on third. We're not talking.
How did I get on third base?
You mentioned his name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
Stay off of first, will you? Fellow's name on third base.
What's on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third.
Can I go back on third again?
Well, I can't change their names.
Look, let's you and I stay on third base and don't go
off. Now, what is it you want
to... Now, who is playing third base?
Now, why do you insist on putting who on third base?
Who am I putting on third base?
Yes, but we don't want him there.
You don't want who there?
No.
What's the fellow's name belongs there?
No, what's on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Third base. Well, certainly.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I don't know. I just thought I'd ask you.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Then tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
Stay out of the infield. Oh,
don't mention the names out
here. I want to know what's the left fielder's name.
No, what's on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Third base.
And the left fielder's name?
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field. As well as I do.
Have you got a pitcher on the team?
Wouldn't this be a fine team without a pitcher?
The pitcher's name?
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you, man.
Go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow you going to tell me who's pitching?
Now listen. Who is not pitching?
Break your arm, you say, who's on first.
Oh, yeah,
I want to know what's the pitcher's name.
What's on second?
I don't know.
Third base.
Have you got a pitcher?
Sure.
The catcher's name?
Today.
Today. Tomorrow's pitching.
Now you've got it.
That's all. We got a couple of days on it.
Well, I can't help that.
You know, I'm a catcher, too.
So they tell me.
Now, I'll get behind the plate. I'll do some fancy catching. Tomorrow's pitching on my team, and the heavy hitter gets up.
So?
Home run Collins.
Yes.
Now, he gets up, see? I'm catching, and tomorrow's pitching on my team. Now, tomorrow throws the ball, and Collins bunts the ball. Now, when Collins bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I want to throw Collins out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's all you have to do.
I throw the ball to first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
If I throw the ball to first base, somebody's got to get it. Now, who has it?
Naturally.
Who has it?
Naturally.
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 That's all there is to it.
Okay, I pick up the ball and I throw it to naturally.
I know you don't. Just a minute. Wait a minute. You throw the ball to first base. Then who gets it?
Naturally.
Well, that's all there is to it.
So I throw the ball to naturally.
You don't. You throw the ball to first base.
Then who gets it?
Naturally.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm not saying that.
I throw the ball to first base. Who has it?
Naturally.
Now ask me.
You throw the ball to first base, then who gets it?
Naturally.
Well, say that.
Same as you. I throw the ball to first base. Who has it?
Naturally.
He better have it.
All right.
All right, folks.
our shortstop.
Abbott and Costello. How they kept track of all of that. Of course, they're very famous. Who's on first? You're listening to Classic Comedy here on the Ideas Network. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Mike Nichols and Elaine May are two of my favorite comedians. They met at the University of Chicago and worked together at the Compass Theater, a precursor of Second City. They perfected the art of improvisation, took their show on the road, and they did that in 1960, an evening with Mike Nichols and Elaine May opened on Broadway. By 1961, they were no longer performing together. They pursued separate careers. Nichols, as you know, went on to an incredible film career directing. He died in November, and we wanted to make sure that we celebrated their comedy. This is a very, very funny piece, very dry humor. Nichols and May and mom, mother, and son.
Hello.
Hello, Arthur. This is your mother. Do you remember me?
Mom, I was just going to call you. Is that a funny thing? You know that I had my hand on the phone.
You were supposed to call me last Friday.
Mother, honey, I know. I just didn't have a second, and I could cut my throat.
I sat by that phone all day Friday.
Honey, I was working.
Friday night.
Darling, I was in the lab.
And all day Saturday.
Mom.
And your father finally said to me, Phyllis, eat something. You'll faint. I said, no, Harry, no. I don't want my mouth to be full when my son calls.
Mom.
And you never called.
Mother, I was sending up a rocket. I didn't have a second.
Well, it's always something, isn't it?
All right, honey, look, please.
You know, Arthur, I'm sure that all the other scientists there have mothers. And I'm sure that they all find time after their breakfast before their count off
down
to pick up a phone and call their mother.
Honey, listen, now you have me on the phone.
And you know how I worry.
Well, that's the point.
I read in the paper that you're still losing them.
Mother. Mother, I don't lose them.
I nearly went out of my mind.
Honey, listen, I want
I thought, what if they're taking it out of his pay?
All right. That's it, Mom. Mother, tell me how you are. How are you?
I'm sick.
I'm sorry to hear it. What's wrong?
Nothing. Well, you know what it is, Arthur.
Yeah.
It's the same thing it's always been.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
It's my nerves.
Yeah.
And I went to the doctor.
Of course, yeah.
And he told me.
Yeah.
He said, listen, Mrs. White, you are a very nervous, very high-strung woman.
Yeah, well, God knows that's true.
And you cannot stand the slightest aggravation.
Well, no. Well, that's fine.
So I said, doctor, I know that.
Yeah,
I know, and you know, I do. I know that.
Yeah.
I said, but you see, doctor, I have this son. And he's very busy. And it's the truth. He is. He's busy. I said, you see, doctor, he's too busy to pick up a phone and call his mother.
Mom, honey,
Arthur,
I want you to tell me...
When I said that to him, that man turned pale.
Right. Mother...
He said, Mrs. White, I have been a doctor for 35 years.
Darling...
And I've never heard of a son too busy to call his mother.
I know, Mom.
That's just what he said to me, Arthur.
I know.
And that man is a doctor.
Mother... Please, tell me, what did the doctor say they're going to do with you?
Well, I may be in the hospital for a while, so...
The hospital?
Yes.
But what are they going to do?
Well, they'll x-ray my nerves.
Mother, why don't you let me know? All you have to
darling,
do is drop me a card.
I don't want to aggravate you. Don't aggravate
you
yourself. Never mind about
myself.
Me, darling. Please, listen, about you. How is your hangnail?
Mother, listen to me, please, please, just don't worry.
Arthur, what does that mean? Honey, what does that mean, don't worry?
Well, nothing, actually. I don't know. I said the first thing that came into my head.
Listen to me, Arthur. I'm a mother.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And I...
Listen, what's the use of talking, you know? You're very young. Someday, honey, you'll get married.
Mom.
And you'll have children of your own.
Mom, please.
And honey, when you do, I only pray that they make you suffer the way you're making. That's all I pray, Arthur. That's a mother's prayer.
Okay, Mom, thanks for calling.
You're very sarcastic.
Mother, I am doing my best here. Now, you call. I tried to explain to you that I was busy. You will not listen.
All right, don't hit me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I bothered you when you were so busy. Believe me, I won't be around to bother you much longer. And listen, I hope I didn't make you feel bad.
Are you kidding? I feel awful.
Oh, honey, if I could believe that, I'd be the happiest mother in the world.
Well, Mother, what do you think? I feel rotten.
Oh, then, Arthur, honey, why don't you call me? Honey, you know, I know that I nag you. You got a nagging mother. What are you going to do? I'm kidding. But, honey, you know, you're my baby. And listen, you're the only baby I've got. And I'll tell you something, when you get to be 100 years old, you're still going to be my baby, you know? And when you don't call me, honey, I can't help it. I worry. And is that so hard to just pick up a phone and call your mommy? Is it? Oh, please, baby. Please.
Yeah, well, I will, I promise.
Oh, honey, if you do, you make your mommy so happy.
Well, if my mommy's happy, then I'm happy.
Oh, thank you, baby. And mommy wants to wish you lots of luck with your rocket.
Thank you, mommy.
And you remember that mommy loves you.
I love you too, mommy.
Goodbye, baby.
Goodbye, mommy. Nanny, nanny, nanny.
Mike Nichols and Elaine May, mother and son. You're listening to Classic Comedy here on our show. Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner are next. They met on Sid Caesar's TV series, Your Show of Shows, and it's when they publicly started their routine that got a lot of mileage, the 2,000-year-old man. They produced, with variations on this theme, 5 comedy albums, TV shows with Ed Sullivan and Steve Allen. They won a Grammy in 1999, and their comedy was said to have influenced a generation of comedians, while it helped make Jewish humor American humor. The 2,000-year-old man.
About 4 days ago, a plane landed at Idlewild Airport. The plane came from the Middle East, bearing a man who claims to be 2,000 years old. He spent the last 6 days at the Mayo Clinic. Sir, is it true that you are 2,000 years old?
Oh, boy. Yes.
You are too... It's hard to believe, sir, because in the history of man, nobody's ever lived more than 167 years, as the man from Peru would claim to be. But you claim to be 2,000.
Yes, I'll be... I'm not yet. I'll be 2,000 October 16th.
Yes. You will be 2,000... When were you born?
We didn't have a formal... years and names and writing. We didn't know.
I see. And what?
Nobody kept time then. See, we didn't know. We didn't write. We just sat around. We pointed in the sky and we said, whoa, hot boy, you know?
That's all you said?
We didn't even know it was the sun. We thought...
You mean you really didn't know
anything?
We didn't
know anything. We were so dumb and stupid.
Sir.
We didn't know who was a lady.
But they were.
Hundreds of, they was with us. We didn't know who they were. We didn't know who was the ladies and who was fellas.
You thought it was, they were just different type of
fellas. Yes, just stronger or smaller or softer. The softer ones, I think, were ladies all the time.
What? How did you find out they were ladies?
A cute fat guy could have mistaken him for a lady. You know? Soft and cute.
Who was the person who discovered the female?
Bernie.
Who was Bernie?
Bernie, one of the first leaders of our group.
And he discovered the female.
Yes.
How did it happen?
He
How did
said,
it come
hey,
to pass?
There's ladies here.
I'm very interested to find out how Bernie discovered the woman.
Well, he...
How did it come to pass?
He one morning, he got up smiling. So, he said, I think there's ladies here. So I said, what do you mean, you know? So he said, because in the night, I was thrilled and delighted, see? So then he went into such a story that it's hundreds of years later, I still blushed.
Sir, could you give us the secret of your longevity?
Well, the major thing is that I never, ever touch fried food. I don't eat it, I wouldn't look at it, and I don't touch it. And they never run for a bus, there'll always be another. Even if you're late from work, you know, I never run for a bus, I never ran, I just strolled jaunty, jolly, walking to the bus stop, you know?
Yeah, well, there were no buses in the time
no,
of
in my time, I mean,
what was the means of transportation then?
Mostly fear.
Fear transported you?
Fear, yes. You would see an animal would growl, you would go 2 miles in a minute.
But I suppose you
fear
had...
would be the main propulsion.
Yes, but I think most people are interested in living a long and fruitful life as
yes.
you have. You mentioned...
Fruit is good, too. You mentioned fruit. Yeah. Fruit kept me going for 140 years once when I was on a very strict diet, mainly nectarines. I love that fruit. It's a half a peach, half a plum, but it's a hell of a fruit. I love it. Not too cold, not too hot, you know, just nice.
What has been
even
your...
a rotten one is good. That's how much I love them. I'd rather eat a rotten nectarine than a fine plum. What do you think of that?
I can understand that.
Yes, that's how much I love them.
Yes, I can understand that.
Yes,
sir.
Some good things.
Sir, what did you do for a living?
Well, many years ago, thousands of years ago, there was no heavy industry.
We know that.
The most things that we manufactured or we made, the most things that we ever made was we would take a piece of wood, see, and rub it and rub it and clean it and look at it and hit earth with it and hit a tree with it.
For what purpose?
Just to keep busy. There was nothing... There was absolutely nothing to do. We had no jobs, don't you see?
What other jobs were there? There must have been something else besides hitting a tree with a
no,
piece of stick.
That, well, hitting a tree with a piece of stick was already a good job. You couldn't get that job, you know?
What job?
Mainly was sitting and looking in the sky was a big job. And another job was watching each other was one thing. That was light work, looking at each other.
What language did you speak at that
time? They spoke... rock, basic rock.
Basic rock,
yeah.
That was before Hebrew.
Yeah, it was 200 years before Hebrew. It was the rock language or rock talk.
Could you give us an example
yes.
of that?
Hey, put that, don't throw that rock at me. Put that rock. Hey, what are you doing with the rock there? Call a policeman, for God's
I
sake.
See.
Put the rock away.
I see.
That was the rock.
Now, do you remember your Hebrew, sir?
Yes, I
would you
I think I
us?
Remember it fluently.
Because I understand the modern Hebrew is different from the archaic.
Yes, it differs in some of the phonetic alliterations and patterns.
Yes.
Yes.
Can we hear an example of the ancient Hebrew?
The very ancient Hebrew is, hi there. Hello. Hello there, how are you? I'm all right, how are you?
That's English.
Oh, wait.
Do you remember any Hebrew?
Very little, I think. I think I remember it. I must have forgot a great deal of it.
I think you forgot it also.
Maybe all, yes. Maybe all.
Yes.
It's thousands of years since I needed it.
Now, sir, did you ever have any formal job as we know it today?
Yeah, well, I was a manufacturer. I was an owner.
What kind of a factory did you have?
I had I used to make the Star of David, the Jewish stars. I was one of the first makers of that.
Oh, yes, the little thing you wear.
As soon as religion came in, I was one of the first in that. I figured this is a good thing.
Yes, and how did you make them? Did you have tools?
Well, we didn't have lathes. I employed 6 men. See, each with a point. And they used to run together in the middle of the factory. And in their great speeds, they would fuse their thing. And it would
thus making a star.
Yes, we would make 2 a day because of the many accidents. We have 6 men running at high speed with points. You know, plenty of action.
You never thought of going into anything else?
No, I had an offer once.
What was it?
Came to me, Simon.
What did Simon ask you to do?
He said, if you have a new thing, a new item, a winner, it looks like a winning item that is going to be a big seller, it's called a cross. I looked at it and I turned it over and I looked in all sides of it and I said, it's simple. It's too simple. I didn't know then it was eloquent.
You mean you...
No, I didn't know it would be such a hit.
You turned him down.
And I said, I'm sorry, but I'm too busy. See, I could have fired 4 men. 2 men run together, bang, you got a cross. See, I could have saved... I would have had over $100 today if I went in with crosses.
It's a shame.
Because they're in everywhere today.
By the way, sir, are you married?
I have been married several hundred times.
Several hundred times?
Yes.
You have been married... Do you remember all your wives?
One I remember well.
Which one was that?
The third one, Shirley. I remember her, a redhead.
I'm afraid to ask the next question. You had many hundreds of wives.
Hundreds and hundreds of wives.
How many children do you have?
I have over 42,000 children. And not one comes to visit me. In the afternoon.
That's terrible.
You bet. How they forget a father, sure. That's how they...
That's awful, sir. It's really... You mean to say there isn't one daughter that
Many
favors
daughters,
you?
Many daughters, but they, you know how they are. Children, good luck to them. Let them go and be happy. I don't want... Listen, let them be happy. As long as they're happy, I don't care. But they could send a note and write, how you pop, how you doing, pop, you know? Something.
No, they don't. Sir, you must have known some great men in your time. You did travel throughout the world.
I knew the great and the near great.
Could I ask you about some of these?
Certainly. I'll tell you the true whether I knew or not.
For instance, people are very interested in somebody like Joan of Arc. A lot has been written about her, and we read a lot about her.
Ah, what a cutie. Joan of Arc.
You knew Joan of Arc?
I went with her, dummy. I went with her.
Nowhere in history do we know of Joan going with anybody.
Well, they don't print that. They don't print everything.
You didn't marry her?
No, I didn't marry her because she was on a mission, you know.
Yes.
She used to say to me, I got to save France. I used to say, look, I got to wash up. You save France. I'll see you later. After you'll save France, I'll wash up, you know.
How did you feel?
Her and her way, me and mine.
Yes. You know? How did you feel about her being burnt at the stake?
Terrible. See, I didn't know.
Sir, how about some of the legendary characters who supposedly might have existed? For instance, Robin Hood. Did he exist?
Oh, yeah. Lovely man. Ran around in the forest.
Did he really steal from the rich and give to the poor?
No, he didn't.
He didn't?
He stole from everybody and kept everything.
How did legend spring up that he was...
He had a fella, Marty. Marty, the press agent, ran in all the papers and wrote in scrolls. He took from the rich and gave to the poor. Who knew? Who knew? He'd give you such a knock in the head when they robbed you, you wouldn't remember anything.
So in other words,
he was a tough guy.
I hate to have our legendary figures smashed like
well,
this.
Well, I hate to smash them for you.
Yes. Did you, you've lived so long, did you ever have an accident in all this time?
An accident, always.
An accident.
Oh, an accident. Yes. Yes, in the year 61, I was hit, I was run over by 7 men fleeing a lion. They ran me over.
And that's the extent of all
but they didn't have insurance, I didn't have insurance. There was no such thing then, so you laid there till you got better.
Amazed.
the 2,000-year-old man, and they went on for years with variations on that routine. You can find a lot of comedy CDs with variations, 2006-month-old, 2000, well, it goes on and on. Well, that was fun. We'll have to do it more often than once every year and three quarters. Thanks to KP Whaley for putting this together, and thanks to Scotty for doing on-air production. They had jokes, too, but we never got to their jokes, so we'll have to hear their jokes. We should end the shows with jokes every now and then. Got to lighten up a little bit. Thanks for listening, everybody. That was fun. I just sat here and laughed for a good hour. It was good for the health. News coming up.